Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, Ticketmaster, Wintel and the Spice Girls. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Good evening.
Not evening.
Well, it might be by the time this goes out. It might be by the time we finish recording this podcast.
No, we've got a deadline.
We have a deadline. It can't be evening.
It's rapidly approaching.
The deadline is in afternoon. Hello!
Hello, right. This is the show where we talk about the last 7 days in the music business, or thereabouts. What's been going on, what's been interesting, what's been important, and that sort of thing. It was a week when, well, various things we talked about before carried on happening. So there was YouTube still banging on about Article 13.
It's still popping up in the app.
Yeah, you probably noticed because every time you try to watch a video, they go, would you like to know about Article 13? And you go, no. Can't imagine anyone who's, like, I see what they're trying to do, but I can't imagine, like, the wording of that is to say, like, we'll find out what you need to know about Article 13. Who's going to click on that? Who doesn't already know what it is?
Well, except they're employing pester power, aren't they? Because there's been a number of articles about how the kids are telling their parents, oh, you need to phone up your MEP. And tell them about Article 13. It's kind of weird, isn't it?
Saying, you're a child, shut up, you're an idiot. That's just what you should say as a parent all the time.
My brain is struggling.
I do not say that to my children.
I've stopped listening to you.
It was a joke.
Therefore, I don't know what you've just said.
Children are idiots, though.
Most of them, it's true.
I mean, no, all of them.
Every single one.
Universally, idiots.
It's all right, they don't get to vote.
My daughter, just yesterday, said, oh, what's that smell? And I said, I don't know. So she brought her nose closer to my face so that I could smell the smell that was in her nose.
There's a certain logic to that.
There is, but I mean, that's just...
I mean, it is...
It's not how smells work.
It's not.
It?
But you can see the logic being employed. I had nothing to do with Article 13. What I wanted to say was that my brain's kind of struggling because when you go down your social feed at the moment, because obviously people I know...
You know everyone has a different social feed, right?
But my point is... Because I know lots of people who work in the music and the media industry, and so lots of people are talking about Article 13 and YouTube's insane over-the-top campaign.
Yeah.
And then over here, everyone else is talking about Article 50 and whether or not it can be revoked or not. There are too many articles appearing in my feed, and I sometimes get them confused.
There's Article 11 and Article 14, which I've had coming up in because I listen to like tech podcasts, and they're not even that interested in Article 13.
We're still talking about the Copyright Directive there, not the Withdrawing from the European Union Directive, not the Lisbon Treaty. Which, what are we? There are too many articles, is my point. I keep seeing things in my feed where it sort of says, I don't know, Michael Gove said something about Article 50, but my brain sees Article 13, and it's like, why is he suddenly interested in the European Copyright Directive? And then you see...
The environmental implications.
Some random YouTuber saying something about Article 13, but my brain reads Article 50, and it's like, why are they interested in Brexit? So it's too many articles. The good news is, we're talking about Neuva on this week's set list.
Correct.
Do you want to know the other bigger news story when it comes to things like social media and online and digital channel? The really big digital development this week.
No.
I'm now on Instagram.
You are, yeah.
I'm finally on
I saw
Instagram.
You followed Setlist.
I did.
I saw that, so I followed you back. You followed CMU.
I did.
So I saw that, so I followed you back. You didn't follow me.
I didn't follow you. I followed CMU, Setlist, and The Great Escape. Those are the only three things I'm interested in. So I'm finally on Instagram.
You missed my picture of a carved tree.
I went to Brazil. Just dropping that in there. And while I was in Brazil, not only did I sign up to Instagram, I signed up to WhatsApp as well. I am now connected to the Facebook empire in every possible way.
There you go. Chris Cook, regular speaker on all things tech. Finally getting really up to date with the latest in modern technology.
Well, in Brazil... I mean, Instagram, I think, is the biggest social media now in Brazil. I mean, that's actually quite a lot of countries. It's getting to the point where Instagram is bigger than Facebook. It may not be bigger in terms of overall number of users, but in terms of active users, Instagram is getting bigger. That's certainly the case in Brazil. And then when I said I wasn't on WhatsApp, everybody just looked at me like I was insane.
Whoa.
Like, why wouldn't you be on WhatsApp? The suggestion that someone might want to email me or text me, or if I really had to, they could get me on Facebook Messenger. They just looked like I was an idiot. So,
fair enough.
I am now on WhatsApp and I am on Instagram. But, as you know, on all my social media, I'm Chris Unlimited because the company's called Unlimited Media.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm suggesting that there
that
will
you're
be...
You're an unlimited Chris.
No limits on the amount of Chris on those feeds, although I mean, to an extent they are because I'm the only person posting to them. So I'm Chris Unlimited on Twitter and I'm Chris Unlimited on Facebook and I'm Chris Unlimited on LinkedIn. I'm even Chris Unlimited on MySpace. I'm Chris Unlimited everywhere. Some other... already got Chris Unlimited on Instagram. Freaking Chris Unlimited. So I'm Chris Cook Unlimited on Instagram.
Why would anyone else want Chris Unlimited?
He didn't seem to be very prolific.
It's not even a good username.
I was tempted to message him and say, you've got my name, relinquish it.
That's how I got at CMU on Twitter.
It is, isn't it?
In the early days of Twitter, when you could just message Twitter support and say, look, this person's got CMU and they don't seem to be using it. Can I have it? And they went, yeah, sure. Sure, they wouldn't do now.
It always looks quite impressive, doesn't it? Twitter.com/CMU.
Yeah.
Of course, it does mean that we get every single student.
Yeah, we didn't foresee that.
At all of the many, many, many universities, which are called CMU around the world,
yeah,
constantly tagging us. Mm. So when you look at the bit on the Twitter app that tells you all the people who've been talking about you, every day there's a million, but 999,000 of them are people complaining about the heating not being on in the lecture hall or the car park, having to pay for it now. So yeah, maybe it wasn't such a good idea. Anyway, I'm now on Instagram. I haven't actually posted anything yet.
No.
A surprising number of people have followed the word we use on Instagram. Connected, linked, liked.
Well, the button says follow, so let's say follow.
Let's say follow, because I assume I'm just popping up in people's feeds because I'm new.
Yeah.
And I may have accidentally let them access other contacts.
Well, yeah, and well, there's that, and it'll be connected to your Facebook.
Of course.
So it'll be telling all your Facebook friends.
That I'm now on Instagram.
Your friend, Chris Cook, is on Instagram.
I'm yet to post, but I'm going to Beirut this weekend. By the time you hear this podcast, that will already happen.
So you can go and look at it on Instagram.
I'm going to Beirut this weekend, so I'm going to take a photo in Beirut.
You could take more than one.
And officially...
There might be more than one thing of interest in Beirut.
Well, I'll see when I get there. I'm not guaranteeing...
Oh, you're not confident.
In the same way, I'm not guaranteeing more than one mince pie at the CMU Masterclass that's taking place next week.
Callback, yep.
The, whatever it's called. What's it called? The Key Developments in Music Rights Masterclass.
Don't ask me what it's called.
That's happening next week. Well, this week, as you hear the podcast.
There's a designated plugging section on this show, which you can wait for. Let's not plug in now.
In the same way...
This intro is already too long.
There may or may not be more than one mince pie at that. There may or may not be more than one photo in my Instagram feed from my trip to Beirut this weekend. Hey, what are we here to talk about?
Well, none of that.
If you're keen to get this intro over, tell me what you want to talk about.
Well, this week we're going to be talking about the World Independent Network's latest report on indie label market share and the possibility of the Spice Girls headlining Glastonbury. But first, Ticketmaster is hoping to have a class action lawsuit dismissed based on something the man behind that class action agreed to in the terms and conditions on the company's website when he bought some tickets.
This is a ticket touting story.
Yeah.
There has been so much ticket touting news since we last did a proper podcast, because of course we had a special edition, didn't we, since the last one. So it's been quite a while. And there have been so many developments, mainly involving Viagogo. So things like the injunction that the Competition and Markets Authority got against Viagogo here in the UK.
The agreement.
Which Viagogo insisted was some sort of settlement. When
actually, a court order.
It was an injunction that said to Viagogo, fix this stuff or we'll take your money and seize your assets and put you in jail. So that happened.
Yeah, just like a friendly agreement.
The Labour Party, the opposition party in Australia, has said that if and when they get into government, they're going to try and extend the 10% markup cap to ticket touting across Australia. And then various artists in Australia, including a band called Gang of Youths. That'll be it. They're big.
The one that would make sense.
They were trying to get all of their fellow artists and fans to come forward with horror stories of their Viagogo experiences, saying they were going to try and get Viagogo kicked out of Australia. So all of these things have been happening here in the UK and in Australia, mainly involving Viagogo. But we have decided to pick the ticket touting story involving Ticketmaster back in the US, because I suppose it's important to remember that while Live Nation's ticketing company Ticketmaster announced earlier this year that in Europe, it's getting out of secondary ticketing, so it is no longer operating its Seatwave and Get Me In ticket resale sites. That only applies in Europe and back in North America and especially in the US. They are still very much in the ticket touting business, providing various services and platforms for people who want to resell tickets for profit online.
Yes. So this American ticket buyer, Alan Lee, sued Ticketmaster earlier this year, claiming that the company exploits consumers by being involved in both the primary and secondary ticketing businesses. His lawsuit claims that the ticketing company accepts kickbacks for secretly facilitating a shortage of its product and then a sale by a third party at a higher price. Ticketmaster does this in order to receive a second cut on tickets that is even more than the original cut Ticketmaster receives.
Says the lawsuit.
Yes.
Not Andy Malt from
CMU.
No,
that's not me paraphrasing. That's exactly what the lawsuit says.
And of course, that was the criticism that was thrown at LiveNation/Ticketmaster here in the UK and in Europe when they were still operating their Circuit Ticketing websites.
Yeah.
That because quite often the tickets being resold on Get Me In and Seatwave were tickets that had originally been bought off Ticketmaster,
yeah.
i.e. the primary ticketing company, Ticketmaster, they were saying, well, hang on a second, it's kind of in your interest to allow that to happen, to allow a tout to buy a ticket on the primary Ticketmaster site and to then resell it on Seatwave or Get Me In, because you, Ticketmaster, get to charge a commission twice, because you get to charge a fee on the original ticket sale and then a much bigger fee on the resale, so you're earning twice. And I suppose the reason why that is relevant is that although Ticketmaster has been in the second ticketing game for a long time, until very recently here in Europe and still in North America, throughout, it has insisted that when it comes to its primary ticketing operation, it is trying to stop touts from hoovering up tickets. It is enforcing maximum number of ticket per purchase limits. It's trying to do technology stuff that will spot touts who are trying to buy lots and lots of tickets, possibly using some sort of automated software. And so they've always said, we're doing everything we can on the primary Ticketmaster site to stop tickets getting into the hands of touts. But the cynics were saying, well, are you really? Because actually it's in your interest for those tickets to get into the hands of touts rather than fans, because then the touts will put them on your resale platforms and you get paid twice. So obviously in Europe, Ticketmaster is no longer having to field those complaints. And I kind of suspect that the Ticketmaster teams in Europe are quite pleased to no longer have to be constantly having to respond to that. But in the US, not only are they still having to respond to that accusation? Of course, we had that revelation in the Canadian media earlier this year where we had a Ticketmaster employee basically admitting on camera that Ticketmaster, the primary site, is a bit slack when it comes to stopping tickets getting to touts because they have these services and platforms that they're trying to sell to the touts.
Yes, well, their Ticketmaster, in its official response to those, has been adamant that this was just some rogue employee who was talking out of turn, talking a load of old nonsense and should not be listened to. No one has any idea why they would even say that.
That employee was flogging at a trade fair a Ticketmaster-owned platform called Trade Desk, which is an inventory management tool for resellers. And so he got into a conversation with a journalist, not knowing it was a journalist, and we got that revelation. But you're right, yes, so Ticketmaster was saying, he's wrong, he's not even in the primary side of the business. He may think that that's what's happening. But the president of Ticketmaster in the US, a guy called Jared Smith, he's been very busy since those revelations in the Canadian press on the Ticketmaster blog and in official statements and in interviews with various media saying, yeah, basically what you just said, which is that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Actually, even though it may be in our interest to have slack policies on the primary site so we make more money on the secondary site, that's not what happens. We've invested all of this money into making our technology spot the touts and to stop touts from hoovering up tickets. We're the good guys, is his allegation. But this lawsuit that came in the wake of all of that was basically saying, not buying any of that. It's totally in your interest for tickets to go from primary site to tout so they can then get resold on your secondary site. We think that that is in breach of various American and Californian laws. Hence the lawsuit, which was attempting to be a class action lawsuit.
Yeah.
Which of course would mean that anybody who had bought tickets on a Ticketmaster site could potentially benefit if that lawsuit was successful. So that was filed a couple of months ago.
Yeah, just after that Canadian media report.
And the update in the last 10 days is that Ticketmaster have filed their response with the courts, but the response isn't parroting what Jared Smith has been saying, which is this is a nonsense. We're a legitimate organisation. We do all this stuff on the primary side to stop touts getting it. Just because we're in both doesn't mean we're breaking the law. That's not actually the arguments in the latest legal filing. Instead, they're trying to get the whole thing dismissed on a good old-fashioned technicality.
Yes, they're trying to get it dismissed, not because the arguments were all wrong, but because when Alan Lee bought his tickets on Ticketmaster, became a Ticketmaster customer who would therefore lead this class action, he checked a checkbox saying that he'd read the terms and conditions of that sale. And in those terms and conditions, it says, if you've got a problem, you will take it to arbitration and not to court. And so therefore, he can't take it to court because he's already agreed to take it to arbitration.
Yeah, in the middle of those Ticketmaster terms and conditions in the US, which I'm sure all of our American listeners have read from beginning to end every time they bought a ticket on either the main Ticketmaster site or one of the Ticketmaster secondary sites.
But of course,
I'm sure they've been reading them avidly. Somewhere in the middle is a term that says, yeah, if there's a dispute about this transaction down the line, you will take it to an independent arbitrator. They even say which independent arbitrator.
Yeah. They've got one all lined up. It's all ready.
A company called JAMS, which does stand for something. The A, I assume, is arbitration.
Is it? Oh, it's just one M. I thought it might be the KLF for a moment.
That's what they've been doing all these years. That's why we've not had any more records. The S, I assume, is service. Don't know what the J and the M stand for. But basically,
jumping.
The jumping arbitration man service. Could you do better than that?
What words begin with J?
Joint.
Joint arbitration massage service.
I suspect it's not that.
Well, I'm sure it's something along those lines.
Anyway, in Ticketmaster's American terms and conditions, it says that if you have any dispute, you won't take it to court, you will take it to this arbitration service. The idea of that is that by going to arbitration for both parties, both Ticketmaster and the customer, rather than going to court, by going to arbitration, it should be cheaper, it should be quicker, and crucially for Ticketmaster, it's a private process.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously, once anything gets into court, it will happen in the public domain. And so, yes, what Ticketmaster are saying is, you filed this class action, but terms and conditions when you signed up for your Ticketmaster account and whenever you purchased tickets on Ticketmaster, or for that matter, whenever you were using the Ticketmaster website, in their legal papers, they were going to great lengths to show, because I mean, obviously anybody's going to respond to this with, well, whoever reads the terms and conditions. That's what everyone's going to say. Nobody ever reads those terms and conditions. This is a cheat. And so they went to great lengths to show all the places in which this guy would have seen read all terms and conditions on their website. And they had lots of screen grabs in the legal filing. So they were saying, when you set up your account, look, this is where it would have said, in blue bold text,
oh yeah,
that you should read the terms and conditions. And every time you use the site, look, it's here down the bottom. And every time you buy a ticket, look, this is where it is by the button. And so they're saying, he's clicked that box, he's accepted the terms and conditions, so he must take this to independent arbitration. He can't go to court. Indeed, the terms even say no class actions. So it specifically says no class actions in this very long term that no one's ever read. But which is definitely there, to be fair to Ticketmaster. It is one of the terms that he has accepted. And so what they're asking for is for the case to be dismissed, or at the very least, put on hold, stayed, as I believe they might say.
Yeah.
To allow the case to go to independent arbitration first. And then, I suppose, if a settlement can't be reached. There are laws in America about how this kind of private arbitration process should work. And then I think ultimately, if an agreement is reached, it does actually then have to go to a court to be signed off. And there is some sort of appeals process. So, I mean, this is in America, there is precedent and statute that says where independent arbitration is used, this is a process you go through. And this is where a court may or may not intervene down the line.
Now, aside from the fact that it's interesting because if it does go to court, court rejects that argument, then we might get some legal answer on whether or not Ticketmaster is an immoral and awful company. But also, it's interesting because it's asking the court to rule on something. I mean, there's a lot of debate over whether or not you can be legally bound by those terms and conditions that you always just agreed to without reading. Everyone just checks the box and clicks OK because, I mean, you want your whatever thing it is on the internet. And you don't have time to read. But there's a Limmy sketch where they're in an office and someone goes, oh, it's Friday afternoon, put some music on. And so he loads up a music player and says, oh, I just got to read these terms and conditions first. And then he's just sitting there, the lights off in the office. And then he's at home reading the terms and conditions. Then his wife leaves him because he's still reading the terms and conditions. And then eventually a week later, like, and yeah, I've finished reading them. Should we have some music on? And no one's into it anymore.
Everyone has gone off the idea.
I mean, the other classic example is if you've ever used the TfL cycle hire scheme in London, and when you go to hire a bike off that, it gives you 32 pages of terms and conditions to read before, in small print on this touchscreen, before you can hire a bike. It would take, someone calculated how long it would take to read it. Standing in the street with other people queuing up behind you. These things are all ridiculous. So yeah, there's a lot of argument that you can't be held to these terms and conditions because it's not a reasonable thing for someone to be asked to read and agree to when they're signing up to a service like this. So it could give some legal clarity on that.
Yeah, so either they say, yes, Ticketmaster, you're right, that this guy can't sue because of independent arbitrations and the T's and C's, in which case that's the court saying, however long and complicated those terms and conditions might be, however few people may read them, they definitely stand. Or they say, actually, we're not going to accept that, which in itself will be interesting, but then that might mean, as you say, that the full case would go to court. I mean, it probably wouldn't because they'd probably do a settlement, but it could have the full case going to court, and then this big argument about whether or not Ticketmaster is acting unethically and, more importantly, illegally by having the two sides of the business and allegedly, I say Ticketmaster would definitely deny this, but allegedly deliberately having a shoddy approach on primary so that tickets get to town so they can make more money on secondary, which is the allegation. We might get some court time on that. So although it's a sneaky employment of a technicality, whichever way the court decides on this, it'll be quite interesting.
Yeah. Still to come, are the Spice Girls going to headline Glastonbury next year? But now, independent record labels accounted for 39.9% of the global recorded music market in 2017, which is up 0.3% from 2016. And that's according to new figures from the World Independent Network in its annual WinTel report.
This is the third edition of the WinTel report. So
have discussed on the show before.
I'm suspecting this will be the third time we've had this conversation.
You'd probably go and listen back to what we said a year ago.
Maybe we should just go straight on to the next section and ask Matt or Jason to go back and find it from a year ago. So the WinTel report.
Yeah. What's that? Never heard of it.
I assume it's some sort of a clever play on Intel. It's the Intel.
Because it's the World Independent Network. That's Win.
Yeah.
And then Tel. It's something to do with winning a telephone.
I always think it does sound, you know, those phone card companies that used to see posters outside of like corner shops in some parts of London. And it's like, phone South Africa for a penny a minute. It sounds like one of those companies. That's what I imagine WinTel being. But it's not. It's all about Win's intelligence, WinTel, on the independent.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
Music. Mark, are you genuinely?
No, of course. I'm just a very good actor.
You're very, very good acting. But also stupid, so it's hard to know. Is he acting or is he just being stupid? Or a combination of the two?
Thanks.
The point of this report, I'm sticking up for all the children in the world.
Fair enough.
Who you earlier
declared. Good, I was thinking of, but I feel quite bad about that.
Were idiots. So the reason...
There was a logic to it. It's quite funny.
The reason this report exists.
I did laugh when she brought her nose to my face. I couldn't smell anything. I have a very bad sense of smell, though. So possible there was a smell emanating from her nose that I just couldn't smell.
Did you tell her that you thought she was an idiot for?
No, I didn't.
For thinking
that
would
work. I
didn't
think she was an idiot. I thought I laughed, and then I thought actually that is quite logical.
Did you then ask her
three
what she thought about the third edition of the WinTel report and its insights on the independent music market?
I have not asked her that.
So we'll just have to go with the script then.
Yeah, maybe we could get her in. She could become our roving reporter.
Just on independent record industry stats.
Well, on anything.
WinTel?
I mean, she could probably do this. What are we doing? Nothing.
Hope so, wouldn't you? It's all right. We'll have a machine doing this by next March. Hey, the WinTel report.
Are we still talking about that? What is it?
I'm starting to think that we should just edit this whole bit out and rerun last year's bit and then just shout 0.9 over the bit where it was 0.6. The reason this report exists, this is what we're trying to explain.
Oh, yeah.
Is that we have these market share stats that come out. So people like Nielsen in the US do them, where they talk about the respective market share of the global music market or specifically the streaming market. And so they will say, oh, 33% of the streaming market is Universal Music Catalogue, and 30% is Sony, and 18% is Warner, and then what is left is everybody else, all the independents around the world. But what the indie label community says is those official stats are misleading because Universal Music has a division called Caroline that distributes music on behalf of independent record companies, and Sony has a division called The Orchard, which distributes music on behalf of independent record companies, and Warner has a division called ADA, which distributes music on behalf of independent record companies. And all of them have been growing that part of their business, particularly Sony and The Orchard, in recent years. And when Universal declares its market share stats and Sony and Warner, they are including all the music they distribute.
Yeah.
And so the indie labels say, therefore, that presents an unrealistic view of the actual market because it's market stat based on distribution rather than who actually controls the copyright in the recordings that are being used. And so they redo the maths and say, okay, anything that is distributed by Universal, Sony and Warner, but the content is actually controlled by an indie label, we're going to take that away from the majors and say that is part of the indie label market share, as it is, so they should. And that's how you end up with a significantly higher market share for the indies worldwide than you would if you were to do it by distribution rather than copyright control.
Now, other than just bragging, why does that even matter? Who cares?
I don't know why it matters. I do know why it matters. One of the reasons it matters.
You're not as good at acting as I am. I was unconvinced by that.
No, it's just because you can't believe I wouldn't know, whereas I found it very easy
to believe you
wouldn't know.
Well, I've heard you say this at least twice before, so I know you know.
And you've probably heard Charles Caldas, who runs Merlin, say it at various events we've organised, because I've interviewed him on stage at least twice where he brings up this point, which is when record companies are negotiating their deals with the streaming services, often market share can have an impact on the deal that a Spotify or an Apple or Google or whoever does with a record company or a music distributor. Not so much necessarily with the core rate, but things like advances and with startup businesses, whether or not they're getting equity, can all be influenced by market share. And so one thing that Charles from Merlin has often said is that when Universal says, well, our market share is X, and it's like, well, actually, a portion of that is stuff that you're distributing. And when you're distributing it, often you only have like 3, maybe 5 year contracts with the indie labels that you are working with. And so in the next year, a bulk of that is going to come out of contract. So actually, it's slightly misleading to say, oh, we have this much, because you're suggesting that that's the copyrights you control, where actually a chunk of it is you're distributing for now, but maybe not in the future. The other thing Charles has also raised in the past is that, I don't know if this happens quite so much now because streaming has become such a big thing, but in the early days, often the official stats that are out there were market share for the recorded music business at large rather than specifically streaming. And certainly in recent years, indies have generally performed better in terms of market share with streaming than they do with things like CDs. So therefore, Charles's argument would be, you're basing things on market share stats that include CDs, but you're a streaming service. So surely the only market share stats you should be interested in are the streaming stats. Mm. So these are some of the concerns that have been expressed by the indie label community about the way that the record industry at large presents its figures. Hence why for the last 3 years, Win have been putting out their own pack of stats.
Yeah, one other stat that it highlights in the report, which was quite interesting, is the increasing trend of artists self-releasing their recordings through their own label and then using a distributor or a label services company to get that music out there and do the marketing and all that kind of stuff. That distributor may then be one of the major ones, and then this self-releasing artist would be included in the major label stats, even though clearly they're outside the major label system consciously. And Wintel reckons that self-releasing artists generated revenues of $101 million in 2017.
Yes, and I mean, it feels like that bit of the record industry is only going to grow.
Yeah.
More and more artists. I mean, obviously, there are lots of grassroots DIY artists.
Obviously, label services is one of the growing bits of the record business. And artists having more control over their careers, but tapping into the distribution and marketing PR services of a bigger company is clearly very attractive to a lot of artists.
And I suppose it happens at two levels. There are lots of grassroots DIY artists doing it at the start of their career, if we're being honest, because it's the only way they can get their music out there, because they're yet unproven, they don't have a big enough fan base. A traditional label wouldn't want to sign them and take a financial risk. So you have all of those. But then, of course, you then have the established artists who often did have a traditional deal with a record company at some point in the past, have come out of that, have the fan base, have the direct channels to the fans, and therefore would much rather do this sort of thing where they get to keep control of their copyright and generally have slightly more control over the marketing campaign and things like that. So we have the grassroots artists at the start of their career. We have the established artists sort of who are past their first big record deal. And I suppose the interesting thing is watching those artists, and a lot of people have been talking about this in the grime community. It's not true in all the cases, but it is in some of the cases of the artists who not only did the self-releasing thing at the start and not only are doing the self-releasing thing once they're a few albums in and they've got the fan base, but who have actually managed to do the self-releasing thing through most of their career and really sort of breaking as an artist.
Yeah.
I mean, usually with a traditional label and often a major label on board, but through a licensing single artist label arrangement rather than a traditional record deal. So that is an interesting phenomenon, and it's interesting and right for Win to be highlighting that, because when you're talking about the independent music community, you are talking about those people now as much as you are talking about what we would traditionally recognise as being independent labels.
Yes, I mean, people who would have been called unsigned at one point. But now, I mean, unsigned, I think it is a redundant word in music. What is an unsigned artist anymore when it's as valid to be self-releasing as it is to be signed to a label.
It has felt like that for a number of years now, hasn't it? Yeah, you do still sometimes get unsigned band competitions. And again, that word just immediately makes that competition feel a bit antiquated and out of date. Because as you say, it's sort of, there needs to be another term for that artist very much. I mean, grassroots, we sometimes talk about DIY, we sometimes talk about, actually, I don't think anyone has come up with a term that artists who are at that level like.
Yeah.
But I think we can all agree that unsigned is no longer the term.
No, although one of the other things that Wynn said in this report is that it also shows that a lot of artists do still aim to be signed by a label. So maybe those artists would consider themselves unsigned or awaiting signing.
Yet to be signed. Yeah, I don't think we're going to crack this.
No.
Anyway, third edition of the Wynn report has been published.
See you back here again for basically this again.
But hopefully without the waffle about noses and children being idiots.
No, I think we should repeat that.
All right then. Well, I'll write it down and make sure I remember.
Before we get to our final story, and I think I know the answer to this, do you have anything to plug?
I can plug some stuff.
Yeah.
Would that...
You already did, didn't you?
I did. Already plugged some stuff. Although, depending on when this podcast goes out, it might be too late. Who
knows?
Going
to go out on time.
Key developments.
Bang on time.
Of music rights. I did mention I was going to Beirut this weekend, so it's whether or not I can sign it off in transit. I'll sign it off in transit.
Yeah, you will.
In Beirut. And it'll all be fine. Key developments of music rights masterclass is happening on Wednesday, the 12th of December. And then we have another masterclass happening after Christmas.
No.
In January.
Wow.
So, I mean, I think this would be a good Christmas present for you all to give your friends and families and loved ones. A ticket to the See Me Insights Dissecting the Digital Dollar Masterclass.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly what I'm going to be giving all of my friends and family this Christmas. Because I gave them the book last year.
Did you?
So that's not true because the book wasn't out last Christmas.
Oh.
Had it been, they would have all got copies. But it came out in January. But I am going to give everybody...
I might read that book over Christmas.
You should. It's good.
Apparently.
It's fact-packed. I will test you on it in January.
You've been testing me on it for the last 3 years.
But the Dissecting Digital Dollar Masterclass is on Wednesday the 16th of January. Both the masterclasses are happening at the London HQ of Lewis Silkin. Apologies to everybody who's not in London. I am doing some speed briefings around digital dollar.
Don't apologise to them.
Elsewhere.
You should live in London.
You don't.
So. Well, I know.
I don't know why...
I know, but I've got no interest in your masterclasses.
But we will be doing speed briefings elsewhere around the world next year. So if you can't make it to the masterclasses, then that might be a solution if you are interested. We have new seminars also kicking off for 2019. They kick off on the 4th of February with our copyright seminars happening 3 weeks in a row. Then I think we'll take a week off. And then in March, we have our music marketing seminars. All of it...
Week off?
...is I might not be in the UK that week. Which is quite exciting, but TBC.
Right.
But if you go to seemeinsights.com, you find out information about all the masterclasses and seminars, and you can buy your tickets.
Yes, and I will put links in the show notes at setlistpodcast.com, like I always do. And finally, this week, the Spice Girls are headlining Glastonbury. Maybe. Well, I mean, they're in talks to do it.
Apparently.
They've talked about it. And it's not really clear who they've talked to. It might just be that they've talked amongst themselves. But, yeah, it could happen.
We've gone from a very bold story to not really a story to something that Mel B once spoke to someone about.
Yeah, it's good enough, isn't it?
In the space of a sentence. This and finally bit is kind of joining up two things that have been happening in music news in recent weeks. So one is Spice Girls on off, on off, on off, on off, on off. Finally on reunion. We talked about that before, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because the dates had just gone on sale on a past podcast. And I think they did add some extra dates after that, didn't they?
Of course they did.
You weren't sure when exactly that was going to happen. So obviously, Spice Girls reunion we've talked about before, and it is that time of year. I suppose because there wasn't a Glastonbury this year, people are kind of getting excited about who will be headlining Glastonbury next year. It's kind of remarkable that people still care, isn't it? In the world of there being so many bloody festivals
all
the time.
Yeah, but Glastonbury is, you know, a special festival, isn't it?
It is still the one people care about. At least we know where Glastonbury is going to happen every year. All the other festivals, it seems to be where they're going to happen this year. It's the news. Who cares who's playing? But
will I be able to get there?
Glastonbury is back next year. And obviously, we know that one of the three headline slots is already gone.
Yeah, Stormzy got that.
I was actually surprised because, I mean, you remember the year Jay-Z headlined and there was quite a lot of chatter online?
I remember that, yep.
About, oh, why is a rapper headlining Glastonbury? I thought the world had really moved on since then.
No,
I was surprised by how many people were offended that Stormzy, who seems like the most obvious person to book to headline Glastonbury 2019, yet people seem both surprised and shocked by that.
Yeah, well, I think there were a number of criticisms levelled at Stormzy, many of them racist. But it was all the usual criticisms. People saying, oh, well, if that's who's headlining, then I'm not interested. Which I think is a thing that people who've never been to Glastonbury say, because you can go to Glastonbury and quite easily not even know who the headliners are and not see them and never go anywhere near the pyramid stage and still have a very good time.
Well, also,
so it's as if the headliners even matter whether you like them or not, because there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Well, exactly. And the stories are sometimes presented as sort of, oh, the Glastonbury loyal audience, the faithful Glastonbury goes every year, are offended. But it's those people who never go to the pyramid stage, because the people who go every year, because it's such a big bloody sight, they pick the bit they like, and often they can spend the entire 3 days in the bit they like. I
mean, there are people who feel that the bit they like is the pyramid stage, and that's where they stay, just at the front of that all the time.
But I imagine,
so, all right,
and okay, there will be certain artists. I mean, I know the year Beyonce played, some people who wouldn't normally go to pyramid stage were like, oh, I quite like to see Beyonce play, and so they would go and
make
the effort.
That's the thing, is you go and see them because it's going to be a good show that you wouldn't normally pay to go and see.
But I would imagine the people who are more avidly interested in the pyramid stage are the more first-timers or the casual Glastonbury goers than the avid Glastonbury goers.
Yeah.
But you're getting Stormzy. That's happening.
There's other people who would just say, oh, like, rappers can't headline festivals. I mean, look at Jay-Z and Kanye. I mean, Kanye maybe. Jay-Z did a good job, though. apparently, Kanye wants to do it again.
Does he?
Because he didn't think it went that well. He got a stage invader and stuff, didn't he? Anyway, so there's that. There's people who just don't like rap. Generally think, oh, well, I'm not sure, like, one person and a DJ is a good enough show. Whereas, I mean, I think Stormzy at the Brits this year proved that just one person on stage can be a very compelling performance. And I realised it was a short bit at the end of an award show and not a big two-hour extravaganza. But I still think that showed that he has it in him to perform a very compelling set worthy of a headline slot at a big festival like Glastonbury. Someone who clearly thinks about his performance beyond just being a guy with a DJ behind him. So arguing that he's not going to put on a good enough show to fill that slot, I think, is a redundant argument.
And, I mean, Ed Sheeran's headline slot was quite well received, and he didn't even have a DJ.
That's true.
And Jeremy Corbyn's slot was very well received, and he didn't even have a guitar.
That's true.
So I think it's proven that one person can carry that stage if necessary.
Well, I mean, I think, obviously, people are idiots. All people. All of them. Not just children. All people are just idiots.
They're just a subset. When you were slagging off children earlier.
I just meant all people.
And children are a subset of the idiots, is what you were saying.
There's all those arguments. There's people who just don't like rap and are just like, oh, rap at a festival, like Noel Gallagher. He probably still thinks that. And then there's people who, maybe this is the one argument that you could give some slight amount of time to consider, which is that Stormzy is too new. He's only got one album. Does he have enough music to fill that slot?
Could he have two albums by next June?
Yeah, probably. So that's that sorted. Right, moving on. Stormzy can headline Glastonbury. They asked him and he said yes.
Also,
so clearly, everyone thinks it's fine.
There's also a suggestion, oh, Glastonbury's a rock.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Glastonbury's a rock festival. They should have rock.
Nonsense.
But I mean, every year, the headliners, there are. I mean, there is usually the rock headliner.
Yeah.
And then there's usually the more poppy mainstream one for the Sunday night. And then someone that's a little bit whatever, eclectic, in the middle. And so that is kind of the formula. I mean, what would be really good is if this year we got Stormzy and then maybe we did get the Spice Girls. We'll come on to why we're talking about Spice Girls in a moment.
Yeah.
But maybe we did get the Spice Girls on the Sunday night. And then maybe they go with, I don't know, some techno act on the Saturday. So there is literally no rock act in the headliners.
It would be good to have, because that's the thing. When people say, oh, there's no new headliners coming through, what they mean is there's not a big enough rock band. Because people think festival headliner, rock band. And, you know, ugh.
Calvin Harris on Saturday night. Wouldn't that be good? So we had, what night is Stormzy playing?
Friday.
Okay, so we have Stormzy on Friday. Calvin Harris on Saturday and Spice Girls on Sunday. That would annoy a lot of people.
It would, wouldn't it?
I'm going to stop.
I think let's do it.
Lobbying for that. Why are we even talking about Spice Girls headlining Glastonbury? Probably not. It was mentioned once.
Okay, well, Mel B appeared on the latest episode of Jessie Ware's Table Manners podcast, which I'm told is a very good podcast. Her and her mum cook a celebrity dinner. Celebrity comes round, has a meal with them. Anyway, they have a chat over the meal and they edit out all the disgusting food.
I'm going to say, I hope there's not too much chewing going on.
They cooked chicken for Mel B. She turned up quite late, but somehow the chicken was okay. They had a conversation how it wasn't too dry despite the lateness of Mel B.
Mel B being extra newsworthy because of the aforementioned Spice Girls reunion, which is definitely on, and so yes. That was what she was talking about.
She was talking about that, and then Jessie Ware's mum said, oh, I think you should headline Glastonbury. And Mel B says, oh, that's been talked about. But then she said, oh, we're so pop, and Glastonbury's so cool and indie, it'd be really funny for us to headline that. It'd be more Mel C's thing because she's more into like the indie and stuff. I don't think Mel B really knows what Glastonbury is either. But yeah, I think there'd be a good booking. And again, it would be that thing like, if I was there, which I won't be because it's just muddy. But if I was there, I would think, well, I would never, ever in a million years pay to go and see the Spice Girls. But if they're on at a festival, I would definitely go and watch them.
The last time we talked about Spice Girls reunion a few weeks ago, we were talking about how it's looking almost certain that Victoria Beckham will not be part of it. Although there was then talk maybe she'll guest at one show. I mean, if they got the Glastonbury headline set, that would be where Victoria Beckham should.
Surely she'd do that.
She would show up and point. Even if she just came on stage at the start and did a bit of pointing and then left. They could helicopter in to do that.
Yeah, but as it stands, I mean, maybe by the time the show goes out, that will have been confirmed or denied. But, I mean, probably not. But as it stands, Stormzy is the only confirmed headliner. But there's lots, as ever, there's lots of rumours. The bookies are taking bets on who the headliners will be. Do you want to know who? I mean, the Spice Girls are not one of the rumoured headliners.
Who's the favourite?
The favourites are Madonna is one of the favourites. Arctic Monkeys.
Again.
I mean, they were, when did they last do it? Was it 2013?
Don't know.
Yeah. Kendrick Lamar.
That'd be good.
There's another rapper, though.
Yeah.
Could the world cope with two rappers?
Because he did play, albeit at a lower down on slot, 2 years ago, didn't he? Because you were really impressed with his set,
yeah,
weren't you? Am I right in saying that? Am I remembering that right?
Are you right in saying that?
I'm pretty sure. Obviously, you weren't there. You were watching it on the telly. But I'm pretty sure you said one of the standouts of the year Ed Sheeran was headlining was Kendrick Lamar's set, wherever it was. Or maybe I'm dreaming that.
You might be. I can't remember.
Maybe I made
Let's move
up.
On. Kylie Minogue. Because obviously she was booked to do it 1 year and didn't.
Oh, yes.
And I think she said in an interview that she'd like to. I mean, a lot of, like, as with all these things, a lot of the reason the people are rumoured is because they're touring and they have a gap where Glastonbury is. Elton John's another one, obviously, he's in his big farewell tour.
Well, there's a 3 year tour, so he's enough
yeah,
to.
He's got, he'll be rumoured every year as long as he's not got a show on those dates. I mean, I think a great way to get the media to write about you is to book a tour in the summer and then just leave Glastonbury weekend free. I'm sure that's why people do it, because it works really well. Fleetwood Mac, Taylor Swift, Paul McCartney. I saw Paul McCartney at Glastonbury once, didn't like it. Like,
I thought I just Fleetwood left. Mac had either already played or had already been confirmed.
No. No, they're just always rumoured.
Is it? Is that what it is?
There's always rumours about there. Fleetwood Mac. Either or Gallagher Brother or
the
real outside one is the Oasis reunion. Bruce Springsteen, ABBA, maybe in holographic form. Pink, I think that's quite an outside one. And then The Cure. Lastly, are also one of the favourites now. I think it's Skybet's favourite now when I looked up the betting odds earlier.
That suggests they know something, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I think if you're going to book the Spice Girls, which I think we've established now that they are, take that, are on their big anniversary tour as well. Boyzone are on their farewell tour. You've got to cancel Stormzy. No one wants Stormzy there. So cancel him, or he can do the Victoria Beckham stand-in. And then just book Boyzone, Take That and Spice Girls as your headliners, and everyone will be happy with that.
He could guest with all three of them.
He could.
He could do a guest spot with the Boyzone boys and the Take That guys and the Spice Girls. There's your solution. We've fixed it. We're going to have to end this podcast.
I've got two extra spots, haven't they, unless Robbie turns up.
Because I need to get on the phone and call my contacts at Glastonbury and make sure they've got that on their agenda.
Yes. Well, I think, I mean, let's assume Glastonbury's not going to do that. But if someone's not trying to book those as three festival headliners, I mean, I don't know who that person is, but they need to be fired.
It's a shame that wireless went from being all pop to being all urban, and we don't have V anymore,
is it
do we?
A shame?
Well,
depends if how close you live to it, I suppose.
But that and V were kind of the... If ever there were festivals who might have booked those three acts...
Well, it's the one that replaced V. Is that still going?
Was it called Rise?
Yeah.
Am I making that up?
No, you're not. That's what it's called.
Okay, well, there you go. That's Rise 2019's lineup already sorted.
Right, good. That's that done then. I think our work here is done. Let's just finish.
Okay.
Shall we?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right then. Well, that's the end of the show. You should do all that stuff people say at the end of podcasts.
Follow me on Instagram.
Don't follow him on Instagram.
Chris Cook Unlimited.
He's not going to post anything good.
Don't be following that bastard Chris Unlimited on Instagram.
I'm going to unfollow you and follow him.
Not interested in him.
Do that or not. That doesn't matter. But what you need to do is like this show in whatever button pressing way you can. Subscribe to it so you always get it automatically whenever the hell it goes out. What's the other thing? Oh, rate it. Yeah.
Comment.
Comment. Review. Follow us on all the social media. Setlist is on Instagram. It's also on Twitter. It's also on Facebook. It's also on LinkedIn. I think that's it. If it's on anything else, I have not been updating it, so don't bother.
Hold your phone to your nose and have a sniff. You never know, the podcast might smell or something.
It might do. I don't know. As we've established, my sense of smell is quite bad, so I don't know. But that's the big takeaway from this episode. Go and sniff your phone.
Yeah.
Right. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. It's produced by Matt Peaty. It's edited by Jason Wolfe. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, Setlist is an Unlimited production.